Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, guys. So what's going on at the Senior Bowl? What's the big story? Are we excited about quarterbacks throwing against nobody and we're going to overhype them now? Is that the thing of the day?
Well, that was what you guys were doing here last year, right?
Wall I think to wall. We were. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because we've actually talked about this, Adam, in our editorial meetings. And it's just this class just doesn't have a ton of buzz. You know, it's like the quarterbacks, like, does Dwayne Haskins move the needle? Does Daniel Jones move the needle? And then you got a ton of defensive linemen, not great skill position players. It's just, I mean, there are things that you're going to be able to find in the first few rounds of this draft that are really, really valuable. Defensive linemen in the first round and then offensive linemen in the second and third round. But, like, if you're looking for sizzle, outside of this Kyler Murray story, which I think is a fantastic story.
It
like,
is, yeah.
Like, outside of Kyler Murray, I don't think this group has a ton of sizzle.
No. I'm watching, like, Will Greer here at the Senior Bowl, and he looks like he's a good player. There's a lot of people hyping on Tyree Jackson, who's 6'7", the quarterback.
And he looks like Lurch out there.
He's a guy's a monster, but he's just inconsistent. Yeah. He's 6'7". But you know, like I was just looking at watching a lot of the wide receivers because from a Browns perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense for the Browns to target a wide receiver, and there are some good ones here. I don't know that anyone's necessarily a first round guy, but I think you're looking at like the second, third round. There's a lot of those guys here, and we saw the South practice, Adam, that just wrapped up here about 45 minutes ago, and that was the San Francisco 49ers running that practice with Kyle Shanahan, and there's some good players.
Yep.
And it was kind of fun to watch that, but it does have a different feel, Adam, than it did last year because when you had Josh Allen here and Baker Mayfield, the buzz surrounding those two players specifically, two of the guys who were going to go to the top 10, you just don't have that right now.
Two of the biggest stars in college football, right? Yeah. Like they were enormous stars. They were household names. They were guys that you'd known and you'd watched on Saturdays, like Baker Mayfield because of his production over the years. And then, of course, Josh Allen was on the NFL's radar. Firmly on the NFL's radar for over a year. Like, you know, it's just one of those groups where I think outside of the top two defensive linemen, right? Like, so Nick Bosa from Ohio State and Quinnen Williams from Alabama. Outside of those two kids, I sort of think the interesting thing about this year is it's almost like a free-for-all after that. What I keep hearing from teams is that there's not a huge difference between the 5th pick and the 25th pick, which means to me Combine, Senior Bowl, like these guys have a good chance. Like guys who are in the middle of the first round have a good chance to really help themselves.
But the good news with that, Albert and Dustin, is that the Browns are in a different position from a Browns perspective. They're in a different position than
you guys are really used to being. You guys must feel weird not talking about having a top five pick. Right?
I know. The Browns are in a totally different position than they've been in for years, guys, because you're not worried about a top five pick. You're not worried about quarterback, which you've been looking for 20 years. And so the Browns are kind of coming at this like more of a normal NFL team than one of these direct teams that are near the top of the draft. And, you know, I guess it's unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, this would be a year to be top five since you're saying 6 to 25 is not much difference.
Yeah, I just think that, again, like they're going to be like there are going to be teams that are going to do really well at 20, and then there are going to be teams that are going to screw up at 8, 7, and 8. You know what I mean? Like that's just it's the type of year it is. And I mean, look, the other thing is like we're backing on the quarterbacks. For a lot of people that didn't like the 2017 class, right? All three of those guys that went in the top 12 picks won their divisions in year two: Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, and Mitchell Trubisky. And all three of them now they fudged it a little bit, but all three of them did wind up in the Pro Bowl. So, like, you just don't know. Like, and Dwayne Haskins could wind up being better than, like, I think he's a legit first-round pick. Is he a top-five pick? Probably not. Like, but he could get there. He could wind up there. And you can't rule out someone making that look smart the way Patrick Mahomes made, like, the Chiefs look really, really smart for trading up to get him.
Like, is there a chance, guys, that, let's say Drew Locke, right, the quarterback from Mizzou, who's here.
Yep.
Turns out to be, you know, the top quarterback taken in this draft and turns out to be a good pro. And we're not even talking about him. Yeah. We're talking about Haskins. And, you know, obviously last year the quarterback draft overshadows what we have right now. But that doesn't mean that some of these guys can't turn out to be really, really good pros. And who knows?
I can give you a million examples.
Russell Wilson was here.
I can give you a million examples of it. Like, I can think about – like, I think about – so, yes, remember in 15, right? So, Winston goes one, Mariota goes two. Leading up to the 2016 draft, what did I keep hearing? I kept hearing, oh, there's no Winston or Mariota in this group. Well, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz went 1-2, and I think it's pretty easy to make the argument now that those two are better than Winston and Mariota.
Yes.
Like, 4 years in.
That's a good point.
3 years in. So – like, there is an element of nobody really knows, you know, that you can attach to all of this. Quarterbacks slip through the cracks less than they did or less than they used to. I think it's much harder because the teams are more open-minded to taking different-looking guys, shorter, smaller, whatever. Like, they're more open-minded than they have been in the past to taking different types of quarterbacks. So you're less likely to see a Russell Wilson pop up in the third round. But there's, every one of them is still a projection, and how they'll handle the NFL is a big unknown for each one of them. And look, Mahomes was, everybody thought he was raw, right? Everybody thought he'd take time. He's the MVP of the league in year two.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know.
We got to get into the playoffs with you, Dustin, and with Albert as well, and all the controversy. But before we get into that, Albert, I'm curious, what did you think about the way the coaching staff has been rounded out by Freddie Kitchens and John Dorsey here for the Browns? What do you think? What are people around the league saying about it?
I think getting Todd Monken was such a huge win. I mean, I think it's a big upset that you would get a guy of that caliber without giving him play calling. And I understand Monken's logic in going to Cleveland, which is he believes in the young quarterback, and it's probably a pathway to becoming a head coach. But still, like, you know, a guy like that who had a really good year in Tampa calling plays, to be able to get him without giving him play calling, I think was a huge, huge win for Freddie Kitchens. And I think it's a win for Baker Mayfield, too, because his reputation is as an aggressor. Like, he's somebody who's going to attack on first down, who's going to go downfield. If there was a point last year, guys, after like five or six games where Ryan Fitzpatrick had a perfect passer rating. Now, think about this. It was through five or six games, Ryan Fitzpatrick had a perfect passer rating on first down. And so you've got that. I think bringing in Steve Wilks on defense, an experienced hand, that's – you know, one of those is just what the doctor ordered. Did a great job with DBs for all of those years in Carolina. So, I think it's really positive. Like, I look at the staff and I say, this is sort of the result of the good vibe around the organization, being able to put together a staff like that.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I like the coordinators, both offensively and defensively. I did want to ask you this much. You know, we were chatting earlier off the air about, like, some of the other moves that the Browns had made with their staff. You know, like Bob Wiley's, for example, is one coach that was not brought back.
Yep.
Was there like a concerted effort by the Browns to basically cut ties from everyone associated with Hugh Jackson? Because it seems like, for the most part, I know that there was two coaches kept on staff, Adam Henry, who's the receivers coach, and then Dwayne Walker, the secondary coach, who's going to stay with coaching DBs. But pretty much everybody else was let go.
Right. And I mean, this is part of it when you hired Freddie was, you know, I mean, he was in Cleveland because of Todd Haley. Like, that's the reason why he wound up there in the first place. So it's not like he was connected to so many guys in the staff. Haley was somebody who was brought in to be the play caller, and Haley brought an assistant with him, and that assistant was Freddie Kitchens. And so the staff was hired by Hugh, and most of those guys probably have deeper connections to Hugh than Freddie does. And so if you're trying to make sure that the issues you had early in the year last year don't resurface, then I would see where it would make sense to wipe at least part of the slate clean.
We're talking with Albert Breer, MMQB, live from the Senior Bowl in Alabama. You know, Albert, interesting weekend for Baker Mayfield. He does the James Corden show. He did the thing with Cooper Manning, which was really funny. He took a shot at Hugh again. I know there's some people that kind of roll it. Yeah, it's relentless.
Show me that.
Amazing.
Relentless.
You know, some people, like, you know, are rolling their eyes, don't like the shots at Hugh, or think maybe he's showing too much personality for a first-year player. I got to tell you, I love all of it. I think we need more personality in sports. I have no problem with any of it, but maybe I'm too embedded in it. Do you have a problem with any of this?
No. I mean, I think he was probably taking it a little harder than he should, right? Like I think that
sure.
Not he personally, but I think that it's probably a little over the top what's happening. I can't, like this is sort of the bed that Hugh made for himself, though, you know? And I'd tell him this. Like, that part of it was, you know, he was told, like, this isn't going to work. Like, if it's you and Haley, that's going to blow up. And you know, he went through with it anyway, and you know, that created a divide in the coaching staff, which ultimately I think led to the quarterback not trusting him. And so you add one to another, it's easy to see where the animosity came from. And it's just you can draw a direct line from Hugh's actions to Baker's behavior. So I don't like it's hard for me to really look at that and say, like, Hugh's blameless or totally a victim here. Is it over the top? Yeah, it's probably over the top, but I don't mind him showing personality, and I don't think that, again, Hugh is blameless in all of this happening.
That Cooper Manning skit was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
It was so well done. It's really funny. I think Baker Mayfield not only shows personality, but he shows a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I heard, it's funny, I was actually listening to Colin Cowherd, who gets a shot taken at him in the middle of that skit, and Colin is almost flipping. He's like, you know what? This is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's not like Baker just being a D. He's just showing personality.
And it's not like I don't – he's edgy. That's who
yes.
he is. That's who he's always been. Like, mm-hmm. he's – and look, like, when you drafted him, you drafted the guy who planted the flag at Ohio Stadium. Like, that's the guy you drafted. And – I just want a player who's comfortable in his own skin. I want a player who feels free to be himself. I just think, I think people in general, I'm not just talking about sports, people perform better in general when they're allowed to be themselves. And
yep.
they're allowed to, you know, it's just, and so I think it's great, you know. And I think the great thing about Freddie, and I talked to Freddie at length about this on Friday. Like, the great thing about Freddie is I think Freddie is so comfortable being himself and so comfortable with the job that he did, like, he doesn't feel the need to change either. And so he's going to be the same guy that all those guys got to know over the course of the last year.
You know, Albert, it's kind of funny when you think about it because, we're down here in Alabama.
Yeah.
And Freddie Kitchens,
is a legend here.
It's a Freddie's a legend. He played quarterback at Alabama.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
right.
This is Mobile, Alabama. Like, people here are diehard
yep.
Crimson Tide fans.
Yep.
And so he walks in the bars and he's –
Freddie Kitchens.
It's Freddie Kitchens. Oh, my God.
Huge deal.
But I think to that point, guys, Freddie has been in the same shoes as Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
You know, they're both were star quarterbacks at huge institutions.
Right, like blue bloods.
Yeah, blue blood programs.
Right.
And both kind of have the same mentality. And so I think it's easy for them to have a mutual respect for one another because they've both sort of been there. Now, Freddie didn't play in the NFL like Baker and all this stuff.
Right.
But it's big when you play quarterback at Alabama,
right.
And they both sort of have that same mentality. I don't give a bleep about anybody else except my guys.
It's like the gunslinger from the South. You know what
yeah.
I mean? There's no other way to put it. I mean, if Baker's from Texas, Freddie's from Alabama, it's almost like that. I think that the guy that I think of when I think of that, like what I'm trying to explain here, the guy I think of is Brett Favre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy who just – like, in a lot of ways, doesn't give a bleep. You know what I mean? Like, that's – I think it's a huge part of who Baker is, both in the way he plays and the way he is as a person, you know? And I think Freddie sort of got that in him, too. And that personality match, I think, is part of the reason why the Browns felt really, really, really comfortable going forward with Freddie as their head coach.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert, before we get to the playoffs and the controversy there, speaking of controversies
yep. –
There was an article written over the weekend, kind of out of left field, about Carson Wentz. For whatever reason, it didn't really add up for me. I never heard of the guy who wrote it. Doesn't mean he's not credible or anything. But what did you make
yeah.
of that report? Have you heard anything to back that up at all?
I mean, do you guys know what a hardo is?
That was
that made, like, you know what
fun?
I
mean? Yeah.
You know what a hardo is? Like, so... like Carson, I don't think Carson's like. I think Carson's a good person. Okay, I think he's a good person. I think he's well-meaning. I also think he's one of these guys who, he'll work his ass off, But he's also going to make sure that you know he's working his ass off, right? Hey. He's a good guy, but he's going to make sure you know he's a good guy. And I think we all know people like that, right? Like they have to let you know. Like they need validation. Like, and it's, I think Carson's a little bit that way, and that can wear on people. I think it was my understanding of it, and look, I might be wrong. My understanding of it was like, what's in the story is really overstating it. Like, I don't think it's a huge problem for the Eagles going forward, and I certainly don't think it's like the problem that like Ben Roethlisberger's personality has been in Pittsburgh, right? Like, I don't think it's to that level. But does it exist? Yeah. I mean, and he's a little bit that way, and maybe that's youth. Maybe he needs to grow out of that. But I don't view it as anything that would make them change their decision making at the position or affect how they see him going forward, whether or not they're going to pay him this offseason, all of that stuff. So I think there's truth in what was written. I just think that it was probably whatever it is that's there. And that story got multiplied.
Albert, you heard us kind of talking there at the 5 at 5 about some of the penalties, the non-call in the Saints game, which certainly most likely leads to a victory for the New Orleans Saints, and we're not talking about anything, right? They win the game, and it's no bad call, right?
Yep.
What do you think the league's going to do? And you've talked to a lot of people over the weekend, and I'm sure as you guys prepare for the Super Bowl, rather, next week you head down, there'll be a lot more talks about it. What's going to happen? What's the fallout?
I mean, I can tell you what I think should happen, which I think they should, again, like, Bill Belichick's going to retire someday, guys, and I'm telling you, just name him Minister of Common Sense for the league. Like, everything that he says, like, when it comes to this stuff is common sense, and he said forever, put cameras in the pylons, and then, you know, he had heard it was an expense thing, so he said, like, well, let's hold a bake sale for the league so they can afford to put cameras in the pylons, you know? And we heard that, and then it happened, right? And so this, like, is something that he's been talking about, which is just make every play reviewable. You have the technology. Why can't you do it? Just make it reviewable. Tell the officials that you can overturn everything. You can overturn anything. People make the mistake of saying, well, that'll extend the games. You're not giving teams extra challenges. Like, I'm not saying that. Don't give them extra challenges. Just make the plays reviewable. And I think just making the plays reviewable is one thing that you can do to fix it. I think the other thing that they should do, and this got me over the weekend, because I didn't think the Edelman muff, like, I didn't think there was enough evidence there to overturn that. Like, I think that should have been Chiefs' ball. Like, they should have upheld whatever was on the field, and they ruled that it was Chiefs' ball. They should have upheld it, because that was not, like, overwhelming evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to me that you look at it, you see the Edelman muff, and not only is that reviewable, but that gets overturned, and then something that's so obvious and game-changing, they can't touch. They're powerless, right? So my thing is make everything reviewable, and then in an effort to make sure that the obvious ones, right, like to like when it comes to flow game and everything else, make sure the obvious ones are the ones that get overturned, put a shot clock on it, whether it's 60 seconds or whatever. Just tell the officials, if it takes you more than 60 seconds to look at this thing, it's not obvious.
And then just overrule the guys on the field.
Honestly, like, we've seen how it happens in college, right? Like, in college, they go up to the booth, and it's a much cleaner process. I don't know why there's this huge need to have the guy schlub over to the sideline and go under the hood for 3 minutes. Like, I mean, maybe it's about the Microsoft sponsorship. I don't know. But it may, like, putting that on the field just doesn't make much sense to me. I think it makes more sense to either have an official dedicated to the review, give that guy, and I know there's a guy up there, give him the hammer. Let him make the decision, or, like Dustin said, give it to New York.
Yeah.
It's so obvious, Albert. I don't understand why they don't do it. Bringing the referee over to the side, bringing the camera out, makes no sense whatsoever. You know, as you said, people that are complaining about, well, too many replays would take too long. We've got all replay in all sports has been screwed up because we're looking for the minutia and the frame-by-frame pictures, and we're taking 3 minutes. If it's that close,
the technology is too good.
Yes, let it go if it's that close, Albert, and get the egregious calls wrong no matter what kind of play it is, pass interference, holding, whatever it is. If it's egregious, get it right. When everybody knows the answer, we shouldn't have the wrong one. It makes no sense.
So, Bull, it's like, it's not only you saying that. That's the way the rule's written. Right?
Yeah,
like it's got to be overwhelming evidence, and we're seeing way too many like 55-45 calls.
Yes,
and I think so much of it is the, and we could have a 2-hour conversation on this, but you know what? So much of it is the ref knows what you're watching at home, right? The ref knows that the quality of what you're watching at home is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times these officials are afraid of getting roasted the next day on the radio or on TV or whatever, you know? And I think that that's part of the equation here. And it's like, it's influencing the way that they're officiating the games. And, you know, part of it is the grades. And I think that just, if I'm the league, I'm saying, if you get a call wrong, you get a call wrong, and you are going to get downgraded for it. But we're also going to downgrade you if you take something that isn't obvious and overturn it, because we can't have that either. And so I just think going back to looking at the way this thing's written, enforcing it that way, and then using all the technology you can possibly use to make sure that every reviewable play, and I make everything reviewable, making sure every reviewable play gets the right look, it's 2019. I don't know why we can't have that.
You know, and last thing before we wrap, Adam, yep. I just want to say this is, I made the point during the 5 at 5. I don't know why we don't keep crews together, Albert.
Yeah.
You know, why are we putting together teams that have never worked together?
Makes no sense.
Like, for instance, Adam, you know, I work with a bunch of different play-by-play guys, different producers, and different. Could you imagine, Adam, if you and I came to work every day with a different producer? In a different board op every day, like the show wouldn't be consistent.
Makes no sense.
I'm with you 100% on that because, and I think I heard you say it. Like,
yep.
They have each other's back. They know how. They know the.
I bet you the one official was scared to overrule the other right. one because, like, he hasn't worked with him.
Right. I mean, look.
Why? He's not going to one up him.
Yeah. I know this. I know what an NFL game looks like at field level. Dustin, you played in it. It is a freaking blur. Okay, it is if you go and you look at, if you watch an NFL game from field level, I mean, it's hard to like get how people, like how a coach or an official makes heads or tails of anything. So you need to train your eyes to watch it a certain way. You need to figure out like, okay, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for that. And you also have to have, like you said, a rhythm between the different officials on the field. So I know he's got this, so I've got that. And he's got that, so I've got that. Mm-hmm. And when you put people together who haven't worked together, now it's all of a sudden, okay, like, well, how are we going to handle this? I just think it opens you up to making mistakes. And, yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100% on that. I think that they should keep the crews together, pick the best crews, not the best individual officials, pick the best crews, and have the best crews serving these crucial games.
All right, that's Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert's taking off. He'll rejoin us tomorrow from the Senior Bowl. Thanks, Albert.
Thanks, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.